Hello and welcome to Label Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting people about all the things you need to know right now if you're driving innovation across the worlds of business, design, tech, and culture. Today I'm joined by three new Labelmates joining the Label Sessions roster. First up we have James Hall. James is the person you want to bring in when everything's on fire. James started his career when simulation systems and mobile phone development, working with giants like Nokia, Samsung, and Qualcomm. He's now shifted into engineering leadership and interim CTO roles with a mix across SMEs, scale-ups, and consultancies, working in safety tech, telecoms, consumer hardware, and the internet of all things. He's known for stabilizing struggling teams, sort of fixing broken tech, and leading transformation when the stakes are high. So thank you so much, James, for joining us.
Thank you.
And then we have Thomas Strickland. Thomas is a senior UX and experience strategy leader known for cutting through the noise to identify the real problem. With over two decades of working across finance, telecom, pharma, and public services, Thomas brings both deep user insight and structural thinking to his work. He's the person clients call when digital systems have become bloated, focused, or unfocused, or simply too hard to use. So thank you, Thomas, as well, for joining us.
Josh, if you could just follow me around everywhere and just say that when I walk into a room, that'd be great. But thank you.
We need some intro music as well, don't we? Brilliant. And then finally, we have Christian Bromley. So Chris has spent over two decades growing Firebox from a startup into a cult DTC brand, starting a customer service and rising to managing director. He ran every part of the business from the inside, including product development, brand operations, team culture, and profit, then staying on to steer it through change, reinvention, and its eventual sale. And now today, he finds himself as the founder of Brain Tapas and the Anti-Midlife Club, working with founders and leadership teams who want to build stand-up brands with soul without burning out or selling out. So hi, Chris.
Hi. That sounded really good. Thanks. That's amazing.
Awesome. Well, great, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll kick off with our first topic. And I have a feeling this will be one quite close to home for you, Chris, given the intro that I just gave you there. The sort of ripples of COVID are still being felt, you know, even 5 years later. And 5 years later, I can't believe I'm saying that. Yeah. Most recently coined as the COVID pause, and there's been a couple sort of terms for it before, but that's just been this article that came out this week. The years of the pandemic is, you know, really warping people's sort of sense of time progression. I know it has for me. I don't know about you guys. But COVID pause or not, there's always a point in time where someone's really gone through that feeling of being stunted within a company or maybe even the career in general. And the question I have for you guys is, what can leaders really do to guide others into re-anchoring themselves and moving forward in the next 100 days or so, let's say? And Chris, I think you'd be great to start us off maybe if you'd like.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, I agree with you. 5 years seems bizarre, actually. I think firstly, it was to kind of talk about my own personal experience slightly, is that it was really beneficial for me. So I don't know if that's talked about enough, which is the horrors of COVID obviously are the horrors of COVID. Uh-huh. But in terms of what it meant to me, in terms of the business, and then my kind of epiphanies, I suppose, after that about work life, it was really important, I suppose, an important time. And I think that the article you mentioned, I've just perhaps not fully understood how existential the dread is, or the experience for different age groups and different times of lives. Because I had a young family, it was really good for me, and we had a house and a garden, so maybe it wasn't the horror show it was for many other people. But yeah, I mean, I do think that the re-anchoring is an interesting adjective term, because what are you re-anchoring to? Especially when it comes to COVID. I don't know, perhaps it's not just about COVID, but if it is the post-COVID world of everybody questioning what a work-life balance is and what it means to work for a company and what a commute means and what being in an office means, then I suppose you need to re-anchor to the new reality rather than to some nostalgic version of pre-COVID, especially when it was probably nostalgia anyway. Anything you're looking back in 5 years is almost certainly not real. It's obviously some permutation of your brain's rose-tinted spectacles. So I would say that's what I would throw out there, which is, what are you re-anchoring to?
Looking back at 5 years ago and spending COVID in New York City, the lockdown was particularly strange here. I mean, it's, and I think we look back at it with a combination of horror at the situation and, you know, panic at the time at the situation and concerned about loved ones, but also the ability to do the quiet of it and the kind of forced meditation of living in lockdown. I mean, my wife and I started doing like home yoga. We had these routines that we would have every single day. We live in the Upper West Side, and so every evening at 7 o'clock, we'd hear Sinatra's "New York, New York" playing in the neighborhood, and so we kind of found a new way of marking time. Mm-hmm. And that was also punctuated by, you know, these things that we ended up calling big stupid walks. So with social distancing, that's difficult to see other people, but you can social distance and walk all around Central Park or other parks here in New York. And so I think the thing to kind of to recenter here is to kind of pick and choose those small bits from the lockdown experience and try to recreate the things that actually helped and the things that kind of helped to keep you calm and keep you sane during that time. So, you know, I still do big stupid walks, even though I don't have to. I still try to do yoga when I can. You know, it's just that little, you know, enforced solitude. It kind of helped a lot. So
there was obviously a lot going on during the pandemic, and it not just the people having to change the way they worked, but you know, it caused massive supply chain issues. I mean, there were some already going on at the time. But if you were actually having to manufacture something, it was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some businesses you could operate remotely, others. If you are running a factory, people have to actually come in and stand by the machines, or, you know, running a shop or whatever. There was some help from the government in the UK and in various countries around the world that helped keep some businesses afloat. But a lot of businesses came out the other side as walking wounded. And I think we've seen plenty of them fall by the wayside since then. But my experience at the time, I'd been with a business for about 4 years or so. And I had a very stable team. We had, you know, everyone knew each other. We had all the processes in place. And actually, when everyone went from sitting in an office in Coventry every day to sitting at home, productivity went up. So they didn't have the interruptions. Someone coming in late and, oh, you know, the traffic was awful or the train was late, whatever, all that disruption. So productivity went up. That was great. But after that, initial jump, I found running teams sort of in the immediate aftermath, and you're bringing in new people into a team, and or you're joining a new team, joining a new company, you find, you know, getting that up to speed, getting that new person, particularly if it's someone inexperienced, that new fresh graduate up to speed, is a lot harder. You just, as a leader, you just have to adjust the way that you manage, because, you know, you're not going to bump into people at the coffee machine every day and, oh, how's it going? But, you know, overall, I think as long as leaders and teams are flexible, you know, I think the COVID, going back to what Chris said, I think COVID overall, from my point of view, professionally, not personally, but professionally, it was, you know, it allowed more flexibility and it has improved productivity, improved all sorts of areas.
A really good point in productivity there, because like I wonder, it's kind of a little bit of what Thomas was saying, is like you do all these wonderful practices, like, you know, you get these mental health walks in, you try and practice better mindfulness, but how much of that is carried over into this post COVID world? And I think productivity is an interesting one, because the example I've really loved at the minute is my partner. She is working hybrid at the minute, and their upper management is really trying to pull them back into the office, but they can't justify it because the productivity has been so high that they can't. they're irrationally trying to pull people in rather than, and the numbers are pushing them back, so to speak.
I've seen that as well. And yeah, there are two sides of it. I see people, you know, if I'm recruiting for a role, I see people who are saying, I'm only interested in a fully remote role. And equally, you know, every so often, you know, some CEO of some massive organization can say, right, from next, you know, from the first of next month, everyone has to be in the office every day, or I'll assume that you've all resigned. And actually, you know, neither of those really a particularly helpful attitude. You know, the thing that came out of COVID was improved flexibility by businesses and by people.
And you know, it does go both ways. You know, there's no point, you know, saying to people, oh, you know, you can have flexibility, you can work from home, but occasionally, you know, I'll need you to come in the office. And then you say, right, actually, we've got something important. We've got an important customer coming in on Tuesday, and we need everyone in the office. And someone says, well, no. You know, it does go both ways.
I think also, Josh, when it comes to like re-anchoring for leaders or whatever, so James is describing a completely different business to what I was in. So like you said, there's no one size fits all. But we, because we'd started for 15, 20 years in an open plan office or largely open plan office, and part of it, we were all a similar age. The entire brand was based on us. We were the living embodiment of the brand. So it was very brand centric. It was very much, so the productivity is one metric, but another metric is how happy you're on, how bought into the company the people are. And obviously, if you're of the same age and it's a kind of, you're working in London and it's a cool industry and we were in Shoreditch and all of the things that is worth protecting, even at the expense of productivity to some degree. Depends what kind of business you are, depends what kind of, how driven you are by those things. You know, if you keep the lights on, you want to be a profitable business, then that obviously matters. But also in terms of keeping staff happy and keeping longevity and being reflective of the brand and being a good place to work and being, as you said, a flexible employer, it's so difficult to get it right. Because like you said, we at the end of it, I don't know if it's like an analogy to like football, but you have certain players, your Ronaldos of this world, who the rules don't quite apply to. The rules apply to everybody else. And that would often be at the lower end of the pay thing. So customer service, warehousing, junior staff, they're kind of expected to just toe the line and come into the office because we're telling you. Whereas me, Josh, that's fine because I've got a young family. And I've done my stint of 20 years of being turning up whenever I'm meant to turn up. So the hypocrisy of being a leader, having to then lay down some sort of rules for everybody else, which you're slightly asterisked by, is also tricky, right? And for us, it was always you almost had to be aware of who had the problem with, say, everyone back in the office. And as cutthroat as it is, could you handle those people being unhappy? Because there is no happiness now. There is, like you just said, Josh, or your wife or your partner, they didn't want to go in. They don't want to go in. They don't see why they should go in. And for every generation coming afterwards, working 9 to 5 is not, you know, Dolly Parton, is not going to be is not going to be the way that they want either. They're going to want this flexibility or autonomy. So it's really tricky to find that balance. I certainly don't think, as James, I suppose, was alluding to, is, right, everybody's in the office or I assume you've all left. That's probably not going to be.
That's quite a short-sighted view, I've always thought.
Yeah, I think so.
But I mean, coming back to what you were just saying, that, you know, little asterisk, the rules don't apply to me. But equally, when there's some crisis and you've got a call with your major customer on the other side of the world, for instance, it's not the guy who has to be in the office between 9 and 5 who is on a call at 2 a.m. trying to pull the fat out of the fire. That's you. And that asterisk goes both ways, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And so, you know, okay, I'm working from home today. And I know that, you know, normally, I mean, some businesses I've worked at, and this works quite well, where they say, okay, hybrid working, but everyone's in the office on these particular days in the week. Because that's great, because then you actually get together as a team. And another business I worked at was, oh, everyone's going to be in the office 2 days a week, but it's up to you. So you'd get one guy who's coming in Monday, Tuesday, another one Wednesday, Thursday. They've never seen each other. So they might as well be sat at home. So when you say, I know that we're supposed to be in the office because it's a Tuesday, but actually I'm working from home because I was on a call at 2 a.m. and I can't get in my car because I'll fall asleep and I'll kill myself. So today I'm going to work from home, and I know I shouldn't, but everyone accepts that, don't they?
I think, and I think the re-anchoring, as you said, is back to what's good for the business. What's good for you? What's good for, you need to, as you've just said, it's horses for courses.
Yeah.
And so therefore that re-anchoring needs to come back to exactly your bespoke set of unique challenges and problems. There is no one size fits all. And maybe getting, you know, the double-sided edge of asking for your customers or for your staff's preferences and inputs yes, but that's going to also probably not be the universal answer either. So difficult decisions.